Vice President, you're on your own. I'm Daria Albinger, Fox News. At least that is going to be the case very soon when it comes to Secret Service protection for the nation's first female, now former, second-in-command.
A spokesperson for former Vice President and former Democratic presidential nominee Kamala Harris confirms to Fox News that the U.S. Secret Service will no longer be providing her with protection after September 1st. The order to discontinue the protection came directly from President Trump. While outgoing presidents are entitled under law for lifetime protection by the agency, vice presidents leaving office are only provided a detail for 6 months. But a source says President Biden, before leaving office, ordered Harris's detail be extended by an additional year. President Trump is canceling that. Eben Brown, Fox News.
The governor of California is trying something new to drive down crime in his state's biggest cities. Here's Fox's Madeline Rivera.
California Governor Gavin Newsom defending himself, saying they've always cared about crime and that they're building on earlier initiatives. So the governor is deploying what he calls crime suppression teams from California Highway Patrol. They'll be working with local police in major cities like San Diego, LA, and the San Francisco Bay Area in areas where high crime is an issue. Newsom says they're expanding an effort that began last year in Bakersfield, San Bernardino, and Oakland. LA Mayor Karen Bass is backing Newsom, who insists they're partnering with local law enforcement, unlike what President Trump is doing with the National Guard.
Newsom says the efforts have led to the recovery of nearly 6,000 stolen vehicles and the seizure of 400 firearms since last year. The AAA says the average price for gas on this first day of the big Labor Day getaway is $3.20 a gallon. That's down a fraction from what we were paying yesterday. America's listening to Fox News.
Millions are choosing NordVPN to stay safer online. Get NordVPN today with 77% off and up to 3 months extra. NordVPN will encrypt your online traffic and help you avoid phishing, scams, and malware. Get the special NordVPN deal today at NordVPN.com. This offer includes a 77% discount on a 2-year plan and up to 3 extra months. Savings and additional terms apply and can be found on NordVPN.com. The offer is valid until October 15th.
U.S. Army Major Scott Smiley paid a high price serving our nation. Scott was leading his platoon in Iraq when a blast sent shrapnel through his eyes, leaving him blind and temporarily paralyzed. Scott would become the first blind active duty military officer before medically retiring years later. Thanks to friends like you, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation gave Scott and his family a mortgage-free, specially adapted smart home. Show your support for America's heroes now. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at t2t.org.
Good morning from the News 11 Information Desk. I'm Danielle Burke North. Yuma police say what started as a house fire was part of a murder-suicide. YPD confirmed the murder-suicide after reviewing an official autopsy report. Police confirmed that 32-year-old Dustin Treese shot and killed 31-year-old Leticia Villarreal on May 31st before setting fire to the home and taking his own life. It was on 16th Street and 10th Avenue. No other injuries were reported. And early voting has opened up for Arizona's 7th Congressional District seat. This means that you can vote in person at the Yuma County Recorder's Office. You can also drop off your ballot at a drop box located at any of the libraries in Yuma County or mail in your vote as well. The race is down to Republican candidate Daniel Gutierrez and Democrat Aralita Grijalva. The general election is on September 23rd. The deadline to request an early ballot by mail is September 12th. Join us on the TV side for News 11 every weekday at 5, 6, and 10 for all of your local news, weather, and sports.
Sunny, hot August weekend is coming. 102 and sunny today, 82 overnight tonight. Sunny and 107 on Saturday, 83 Saturday night. Sunday, sunny and 109.
Investment advisory services offered through CWM, LLC, and SEC Registered Investment Advisor. Welcome to Money Talk with Yuma Investment Group's Tom Rush, founder, wealth advisor, and George Davis Sr. Wealth Advisor.
Hey, Yuma, this is Money Talk here, another great Friday in Yuma. Tom Rush here and Derek Egberg. We are doing the joint session on Money Talk, Yuma Investment Group, and Imperial Valley Wealth Management.
That's a
hard, hard to say. And we got Egberg, who's the general manager over at Mortgage One.
Man, okay, we got to script out these names for Tom over here. Holy cow.
I reversed it the other way. But at least I'm getting closer, right?
You know, is there a teleprompter we can get in here, Russ?
I think last time I called it First Mortgage. So now it's Mortgage One. Okay. Whatever happened again? Got my word on that.
All right. I'm holding you to it.
So anyways, what's going on in your world? Anything big?
You know, I mean, it's starting to get busier, but what you're noticing is everybody is assuming rates are coming down, but they're not. I mean, they're marginally down, but you're not going to see any rate relief until the stock market has some kind of a correction or there's some economic issue. I don't think you're going to see huge rate relief until after May. What happens in May?
So you think because I'm saying the Fed should cut rates one time, maybe two.
I think you're going to
get. That doesn't affect much. It's already built in.
You're going to get, I feel like you're going to get 2 quarter-point cuts before the end of the year. And again, those are kind of like the teaser candy, if you will. You need really about 1.5 cut, which is why I think President Trump, you know, when he was saying he wants the Fed to cut 3 points. You know, he's the art of the deal. He's going to say, I want 3 points because he knows he really wants 1.5.
Right.
And I think come May, June, when there's a change in the Fed chairmanship, I think you're going to see 1.5 cut total. But I think you're going to get nominal cuts between now and then. You guys just hit record all-time high in the S&P, right?
Yep.
I mean, S&P all-time high yesterday. If the stock market is doing well, will interest rates ever drop? No, they can't. So I don't see any major relief, but now it's been so long that rates have been up in a normal sense that you're seeing people go, man, I just got to buy anyway, where it's too small. We got to get out of this apartment. You know, they've been hanging on for a year. So you're seeing more and more of these first-time buyers come back into the market, and there are some reasonable priced properties. And that's the other thing. I think finally the message is getting out there. If interest rates dropped 1 to 1.5, what would home prices do? They have to go up by quite a bit. So those people that don't own a home yet need to get in, and that's what you're starting to see is a lot of people who are understanding, man, we got to get out of this apartment. We got to get into a home before prices go up, and then we can refinance later.
What's the longest you can lock in a rate, even if you have to pay for it, before you actually have to do the actual mortgage? Is it like 90 days or longer?
Well, so technically you can do no cost 60 days. You can do a 30-day extension and there will be a cost to it. You can lock people up to 6 months, but there gets to be longer longer, more penalties to it. You know, back in the day, some banks were offering 270-day locks. You had 9-month locks on construction loans. But right now, the market is slowly edging better. You know, we've gotten a little better over the last month and a half. So the long-term lock isn't really a big deal. I think the longer people wait, the lower rates will be. But it's such a small incremental slide. It's kind of like, Tom, if you walked to your car and picked up 15 pennies, would you really feel like you had any more money if you picked up 15 copper cents on the way to your car?
No.
You know, but you do have more wealth. You do have more. So that's what I'm saying is interest rates have ticked down marginally, and it feels like picking up pennies. We need to be picking up dollars for the consumers.
Yeah. But I think you're right. I think people that have been on the fence and the rates have came down a little bit, that they're probably starting to get anxious and jump off, right? I mean, jump onto or not. You see that?
I see that. And the one thing that has changed is here we come up to the holidays again. What does everybody do for Christmas and holidays?
Spend money like a banshee?
Overspend. I am now seeing more and more people asking for cash out refinances and help to redo their debt because they're in trouble again. And so now you're starting to see there hasn't been any rate relief in the last year and a half, 2 years. People have racked up credit card debt like Russ has at 29%. Right, Russ?
No.
25.
But the only way for a lot of these people to get out of that hole is to rearrange their first mortgage and do a cash out refinance. I bet it's one person a day coming in who needs help with that.
So you're saying that the loan, the debt is coming back to people and they're trying to deal with it through the mortgages?
More than you know.
Yeah.
If you start looking at the data and statistics for credit card defaults and auto defaults, you can see that there's issues out there, but there's so much revenue into the economy and, say, the stock market, you guys are still at all-time highs, right?
You say that kind of in a anger way.
No, not at all. I mean, I would like my 401k and IRAs to keep doing well, too. Tom, keep the pedal to the metal over there. But what hasn't happened yet is you haven't seen the ramifications of credit card defaults or auto defaults hit some of these institutions yet. And there's a lot of people who are trying to fix that before they lose anything.
Yeah. You know, what's pretty interesting is they came out with some stats on 2026 for earnings. And, you know, it's just stats and it's someone's guess, so nothing certain. But they have earnings going up quite a bit from 26 compared to 25. Mm-hmm. When I read this thing, I even had to do a double take on it. But the S&P 500 2025 earnings estimate, this is for the companies, about 9.2%. In 2026, they have it up to 12.7. And almost across the board in energy, financials, healthcare, like there's the numbers look stronger in 26. But then that could be true because, as you know, you listen to the news and everything, a lot of stuff's coming back to the U.S. and a lot of companies are being strong-armed into investing in countries, not our country, other countries, yeah. Invest in the U.S. And then the other thing that's really a big effect is the energy. We're now the largest maker of energy in the world, and 30% of that gets exported to different countries. And about 2015, the export was about 15%. So in the last 10 years, it's gone up, doubled. And as you know, with the Trump agenda, they are, you know, pro all that. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't surprise if it even goes higher. But that's a big shot in the arm for, you know, Americans, money, and everything else. So
it would be interesting to look deeper into the energy sector again with these data centers going in all over the country and the amount of electricity and energy needed for computing and AI and all this other stuff. Are we on pace to continue creating enough energy for what we do and still export? You said about 33%?
30%.
Still hard to imagine AI takes that much energy. But the energy we're exporting is not electricity, and we need electricity for AI, and we don't have the grid for it.
Right.
Now.
That's what I'm saying.
So oil, natural gas, and coal are the exports.
Right. Yeah. But that's what I'm saying is you still have power plants that are running on all three of those resources.
Yeah.
So at some point, unless we have additional electricity going into the grid from other alternatives, you might need some of those resources here.
So I think what's going to happen is and this is what I read, the old infrastructure can't move quickly to get more electricity. I mean, it's going to take like, you know, 10, 20 years to build infrastructure out that the way we're doing it now. So they're going to go more towards nuclear. And now they have these little pods that can be set up. You know, one pod could take care of Yuma, and you can just kind of like, you know, and some of these big data centers actually have their own energy hub right next to it. So they've bypassed the city or whoever supplies their energy. Mm-hmm.
We don't have those pods in the United States yet, to my knowledge. There are very few of them in the world, but they're starting.
There's a data center back in Tennessee that's really big, and they have the whole energy set up, and those pods are going in.
Are they?
And before, you know, the red tape to get a nuclear thing going was, I don't know, 10 years, 7 years. They got them pre-done like in 18 months or something. I think you're going to see more of that because ultimately if they can't figure out the energy grid, it's just going to fail and we're going to have blackouts. What's the quickest way to make people mad is having rolling blackouts, right?
115 if you're a politician, degrees in your house with no air conditioning.
If you're a politician or city government or state government, any government, it's just a nightmare.
Well,
so,
and you also talk about, since you're talking about the energy consumption of those data centers, you're also talking about the cooling of all of that equipment and the water resources and things that are needed to actually cool the amount of equipment that's in there. Where was it that they just declined putting the data center in because of that? That was just a week and a half ago.
It had to be somewhere in Arizona, right?
What was the question? I was reading.
Where was the data center that the city council just said don't do it because of the water and
I don't remember.
It had to be southern states, right? I mean, southwest states?
I don't recall. I remember reading that the city council voted against the data center because of the water needed to cool it, but I don't remember where that one was. And Russ is doing the one finger type, the hunt and peck. This is kind of fun to watch.
I also read somewhere that the data centers are now looking for kind of neutral type temperature, like somewhere like San Diego. Now, granted, I don't think they have much space in San Diego, but they're not looking for the extremes. Like Arizona is very extreme, up, down with temperature, and that could have a big impact.
There's been a couple of data centers turned down. One was Amazon's Project Blue in Tucson, Arizona, and a proposal at Peculiar, Missouri, due to community opposition and environmental impacts.
So maybe Tucson.
Maybe it was Tucson.
Yeah. Hey, so I'd like to bring up something that ties into mortgages. So the last 2 weeks, doing financial plans, we look at people's assets, liabilities, and we plug in the liability, the rate, you know, when they're going to pay it off, whether it's a mortgage or anything else. And what I've found is people are borrowing money, and in this case for college, and everyone's going back to college right now, so that's what kind of popped in my head. But basically they borrowed over $120,000 to send their kid to public school in Arizona, and that all got put into the financial plan. And by doing that, probably kicked their retirement back by about 4 years. Now, don't get me wrong, like, you know, do what you can for your kids, and I'm not, but I see a lot of parents bending over too much, and I've even seen it where the kids don't even graduate, so they rack up all these bills, and the parents pay, and they don't even graduate. So, I don't know, I'm kind of a believer of, if you don't have the money, like anything else, don't go try to buy something that you can't afford. Junior colleges are really good, online, you know, stuff's pretty good. But when you graduate from, and then you can go to like a 4-year degree. When you graduate, say from ASU, but you did 2 years at AWC.
Yeah.
Do you think people ask like, "Oh, where did you graduate from?"
No.
Oh, ASU. Yeah. Okay. What was your major? They don't. The details are irrelevant. So.
Yeah.
I think parents try to, you know, bend over when they don't have the funds, and that hurts their retirement.
Well, and if you went to a university that has a strategic advantage because there's the right course or you're networking with the right people, maybe. You know, again, if you happen to get into a Yale, a Harvard, a Princeton, and you built a legal career out of that, and maybe that gave you a heads up, great. But most people, when you go to your doctor, what do you call him? Him or her? Doctor? You don't say, "Hi, doctor, you graduated from X university." You just say, "Doctor."
Yeah.
So I don't think that matters, but maybe 1% or 2%.
Then I saw another client who has 6 kids. The oldest one got married. She was a girl, and pulled like $40,000 out for this wedding from their house.
Wow.
And there's like 3 other girls like coming up, and I told them, I was like,
"That's $160,000.
I said, "Well, A, you're setting precedent, and B, you really didn't have the money to throw this big wedding, so why would you not just do something more scaled down?" And I don't know, but I see the debt side is causing people to postpone their retirement, but it's a choice. Everyone has a choice.
It is a choice, and again, you know, it's and you asked it from a mortgage perspective. What I see a lot of is people rearranging their credit card and their toy debt, meaning cars, razors, trailers, boats, because they're living on the debt as opposed to living on their income and saving something. And I think it's just a choice that when you say somebody pulled out $40,000 for a wedding.
Short-term gratification?
Yeah.
Long-term gratification.
Did they plan, you know, when their daughter's born at age zero, did they start saving for the wedding, or did they just go, "Oh, we didn't save it, so now we feel like we need to pull it out of a house"?
Yeah, well, they did the latter. But hey, we're taking a break here. This is Money Talk, 560 AM. Be right back.
This is Derek Eggeberg, NMLS number 180899 with Mortgage One. When it comes to the biggest financial decisions of your life, you deserve expert guidance. At Mortgage One, we know a home loan is more than just numbers. It's part of your financial future. Our team's highly qualified professionals provide a complete mortgage analysis. We'll help you explore the available programs and options to fit your needs in today's marketplace. The Mortgage One team will work to blend your mortgage needs and compare cash to close and payment options with various programs in today's marketplace, offering competitive interest rates to meet your needs. Again, Mortgage One, an equal housing lender, NMLS number 898812. Give us a call today at 928-483-LOAN, which is 928-483-5626.
At Yuma and Imperial Valley Wealth Management, we believe we manage money for our clients differently from many other advisors. Our way works in close alignment with our clients' goals. Yuma and Imperial Valley Wealth Management is a fiduciary obligated to put clients first. It's the highest standard for a financial advisor when it comes to helping clients pursue a comfortable retirement. We're clearly different. Visit YIVWM.com. Find out why investors switch to us. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC and an SEC registered investment advisor.
Good morning, Yuma. Russ Clark, Derek Eggeberg, Tom Rush in studio. Russ over there trying to catch us on Kenny Loggins. Come on, seriously.
There you go.
Come on.
I figured you'd know that one.
Yeah. So, you know, again, gorgeous Friday, as Tom said, opening up the show. It's actually gorgeous outside, a little humid, but the temperatures feel like they've broken a little bit. There's some relief in the air. And I love that, that's kind of the first step to, we can breathe just a little bit.
Yeah. I got some desert plants in my parking lot at the house.
Those are called weeds that are coming up through the cracks.
No, that mesquite trees and some other things, Palo Verde. But, I mean, the desert, they needed some water. I mean, yeah. So I'm glad we got poured on, even though a lot of roofs were leaking and other things were happening, but desert hopefully will get
gorgeous.
Yeah.
So again, taking that breath, stock market's up. You guys are at all time highs. We've seen a little bit of relief in the mortgage industry, so we both feel good. Russ, are you seeing people come in and do like maintenance on cars? Are you seeing relief that way?
We're busy, but I don't see that being the economy changing that much for us. I mean, we're not a shopping place. Like, yeah, I always wanted to get my alternator fixed, so it's an emergency.
You can't chrome my alternator?
An emergency, man.
How many people have the service done, and then when you say, it's going to be $300, they kind of look at you strange and be like, I only got $250.
It doesn't happen. Because we tell them exactly what it's going to be beforehand, generally.
Uh-huh.
And we're allowed to be 10% under and add 10% without, going along. We never do.
Yeah.
If we have a 10% increase for something else, we call them before we touch it.
But you had to have some people like, hey, I just paid my cell phone bill, so now I only got $280 from $300. Yeah. What do you do there? Are you just kind of work a deal out? Or
it hasn't really happened. I mean, they may tell us ahead of time, like, I don't have money for it.
Yeah.
And they say, we'll ask them what's their plan. We can work with some people.
Sure.
We've done that a couple times. It's not normal.
Yeah.
But
especially if you have trust factor there.
I've never had it happen after the fact, but, I have. It has happened.
Yeah.
We just hold the car in the back lot.
But that's
release it.
Are you allowed to do that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Kind of like
that's called a mechanic's lien.
But back
to that, that's exactly why the credit card balances are going back up. And you can see that people are living on credit. And we just have not kind of functionally taught people well enough. Live on what you make, save first, then go spend. And again, Tom, you walked in with an expensive coffee, right? Not begrudging you that. But you went out for an expensive coffee, and I came in with probably double the coffee in a thermos. Who spent more money? You did. But as long as it's budgeted, I don't care. But you see,
it was an impulse buy. Let me just tell you,
they almost always are. But again, it's you see some people that's their. I got to have my habit, but I didn't budget for it. And so, like when you say auto repairs. Russ, how many people of your customers actually budget for new tires every 2 or 3 years?
Probably none. I mean,
or
I don't think anybody
battery
ever.
Battery every 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, 5%.
You have people that'll budget like, I should have 3 months earnings or 6 months earning in the bank. That's a budget in itself. But I don't know if anybody just does it specifically for cars. They do for airplanes.
They have to.
Well, yeah, they'll budget. So much an hour is an average for repairs, and a lot of people do that.
Mm-hmm. And you go back to houses. I tell every one of our customers, whatever the purchase price is, figure 1% of that purchase price is about what you're going to spend on annually to fix that house.
I don't think most people think about that.
They don't. It's funny because when I say that, the first thing they do is the eyeballs go like the old Scooby-Doo googly eyes.
But it's a new house. What could happen?
Sprinklers, yeah. Roof, I mean, leaks. My goodness, you think Lyons and Lundgren is busy after that last storm? Holy cow. I bet if we called Jonathan right now, we couldn't
Nobody's
get him on the phone.
Nobody's seen him since the storm.
Yeah, probably couldn't get him on the phone.
So how about when you sell the mortgage, is some of it built in to cover the appliances? I mean, you can pay extra insurance. Is that an insurance issue?
Like a home warranty?
Yeah.
You can buy home warranties.
But that's nothing to do with what you do.
Nothing with the mortgages. So there's two things that people add on. One that makes sense. One that, I'm not a big fan of. But like a home warranty. You can get a home warranty that covers your AC, your hot water heater, and those systems. I always tell people you probably need one of those for a year or two, because if you've never lived in the home, you don't know how things are going to work.
Especially an old unit up top.
Yeah. So those things you absolutely can get, and sometimes those are, again, a great purchase. But what, Russ, you were talking about in the show earlier, you get some cheap home warranties and you get some good home warranties, and some will pay and some try to get out of paying.
Some are good, some are bad.
I wonder why your industry hasn't tacked on a couple other things that you guys can service people with, like that, for example, what you just said, like the home warranty.
Well, when you say,
I know you're regulated, but
so affiliated business, and again, there are some companies that do have affiliated businesses that try to wrap all those things in. But again, from a customer service perspective, now it feels like you're adding on and packing, to use an auto term, you're packing those things in. No. As a mortgage person, I want to do mortgages, and I'll kind of give you my advice of what I would want you to do. But it's like one of the other products that, and again, I'm sorry if it steps on anybody's toes, but have you ever heard of mortgage life insurance?
Yes.
Okay. In my opinion, little old Derek, that's a rotten product. What is mortgage life insurance in your opinion, Tom?
It's not a good product. Okay. And the reason being is because whatever your debt is slowly going to go down over time, and that life insurance goes down over time. If you spent the same amount of money, you could probably buy a 20-year term or 30-year term, and that stays constant. Yeah.
You nailed it. The person who takes out a 30-year mortgage for, let's say, $300,000 and goes and gets a mortgage life insurance policy literally bought a 30-year term policy that every year you own that mortgage, it decreases in value. So let's pretend when you've got your mortgage paid in half, how much would that mortgage life insurance pay if you only owe $150,000? Answer, $150,000. So it's a decreasing value, but there's a lot of mortgage companies that sell that. I would rather say, no, go talk to my insurance agent. Go get a 30-year term policy on yourself. So if 50% of the mortgage is paid off and you only owe $150,000 and your life insurance pays you $300,000, cool. You can pay off the $150,000 and you pocket the other $150,000 because you're paying for the value that you're going to get, not a decreasing value.
And the ones that I've seen, the cost is almost, you know, the same as a 30-year term.
It is a 30-year term. That's all it is, so, except it's a decreasing value. So the insurance company side of it knows the longer you hold that mortgage before you pass away, the less they're paying out, so the more profitable it becomes.
Yeah,
that's what I say. When you say, why hasn't the industry done it, I think there are lots of things they can pack on, but the reputable people choose not to do that because they'd rather refer to the professionals. Like, again, I want people to talk to you about financial planning from that side. I'll talk about the real estate and the mortgage side.
Yeah. But I do think, like, even if you said, hey, go talk to someone about the life insurance, then you have the thing where people think about it for about a half a day and then they just forget about it. And more, 85% of the time, people don't action plan anything. So if you could do it on the spot, it might be a benefit, right?
I mean, it could be a benefit. But here's, let's pretend Russ came in for a mortgage. Here's the only thing I say is, look, I've got an insurance agent who's a good friend of mine, also takes good care of me. Russ, I expect you two to have 5 policies based on what I know about you. You need the mortgage because you have to have the homeowner's insurance. You probably want to have your home and your auto together because you always get way better discounts. Talk to your agent about getting both you and Helen's car there. And if you guys don't have a 30-year term policy, you should probably both have a 30-year term policy. So if one of you passes, the home is paid off for the other one and you can live comfortably. Go get 5 policies, 1 home, 2 auto, 2 term life, and be done. Now, what do most people never get advice of? Protecting themselves that way. Whoever thinks to get 5 policies at the same time when you're buying a house?
None. I don't know.
None. But that's instead of going and getting a 30-year mortgage policy, go get a 30-year term policy and just ride off into the sunset.
Yeah, it's amazing how a lot of people will postpone something till they don't do it, or they will just not do it, even though it's a good thing.
Well, how many times do you see the car wash up and down Fourth Avenue for, you know, raising funds for funerals?
I mean, you know, yeah, happens.
A couple times a month.
Well, they GoFundMe for funerals, right?
Yeah.
Someone passes.
Well, I guess
and
now it's
want.
A lot of GoFundMes.
Yeah.
But again, that is because there wasn't a life insurance policy on the front side. And for most people, they don't get it, you know, when you're young, when you're healthy, because you think, I don't need it. And then by the time you need it and you're not young and you're not healthy, then it gets really expensive. I mean,
the thing that messed me up with life insurance is I have four kids. I didn't know I was going to have four kids, but I knew I'd have more than two, hopefully, God willing. But anyways, I wasn't making as much money starting out. So I was underinsured myself, not knowing, like, oh, well, this is what I make, so here's what I'm going to get. And then about every 10 years, you're like, dang, I need more life insurance. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're going to try to protect the family. And then, you know, now instead of 24, I'm 34, and I had to get more like 44. So if I were to overshot in the beginning, and it was so dang cheap at 24, mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking the difference between $20 a month and probably, you know, $45 a month would have put me where I needed to be. But so I always try to get younger people to overextend the life insurance, especially if they have the possibility of increasing their
pay.
Okay,
now, full disclosure, neither you're not insurance licensed, I'm not. So
I am insurance licensed.
You are?
You
okay.
are.
So are you talking whole life or term?
Term.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not licensed, so I just tell you what I do personally. Every 5 years, I go reprice mine. So when I was 40, I got X number of insurance. When I was just before I turned 45, I repriced it all, and I replaced my term policy from 40 that would take me to 70 to 45 that takes me to 75. Cool. Whole new 30-year term. Yeah, the payment went up just a little bit, but it wasn't that bad. Guess what I did at age 49 and three quarters? Repriced it all again. So now I got 30-year term from 49 and three quarters to age 79 and three quarters.
Which is really unusual, right? Because, I mean, that's long-term insurance. So most people don't do that. They will get it when they're 35 or 40, mm-hmm. then just ride it to the end, and then when it's done, it's done.
And I would rather kick that can as far as I can down the road. Now, you know, I'm not at the next revisit, but am I going to, and if you're licensed, am I going to be able to get a 30-year term policy when I turn 55?
Probably not. I think okay. it stops at some point.
So the likelihood is that's when it cuts back. So probably the policies that I have in place right now are the
permanent.
Ones I'm going to ride till ever. But if I pass away before 80, cool, then all that money is there for estate planning purposes. If I pass away by after 80, probably didn't need it anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, the other idea, you know, is just to become self-insured, right? So you don't need life insurance. Especially,
that's Russ.
Especially, I mean, the term is locked in and you know what you're going to pay. But whole life and universal life, they don't tell you this. But as you're younger, you know, you put in, first of all, whole life, universal life costs more money than term. It's usually like 60 cents more on the dollar than term. Mm-hmm. But when you're younger, the cash value builds up quicker. But as you get older, that gets sucked down quicker because they're basically pricing it on your age. So I had a gentleman who was out in East County. He was 72 years old, had $250,000 universal life, and he was paying his premium, his $45,000 cash value. So there's $45,000 there. And within 4.5 years, that $45,000 was going to get sucked down to zero. And that's called an elapsed policy, which means it's broke, basically. Yeah. They send you a letter in the mail that says your policy has elapsed. If you want to keep it in force, send us X. And X is, like, huge. Usually the number is, like, you know, 10,000, 15,000. Yeah. Yeah, it's really huge, like the point. So sometimes you can see if the car is going off the cliff, you can wait till you get close to the cliff, or you can just try to do something ahead of time. Especially if that's $45,000 value.
Yeah.
So it is a tricky game.
And again, you know, Russ, do you have life insurance?
No.
Okay. So again, little old Derek and little old Yuma, here's my thought. I want to invest in real estate and equities. I'm not investing in insurance. So I've only ever done term, and I'd rather take that savings to not worry about the car falling off the cliff and go put it in the stock market, bond market, real estate, and when you say self-insured, I'll do my own financial planning that way. I just don't need whole or universal. Now, I know there's a lot of people that you guys have done really well for. So it just kind of depends on what your setup and philosophy is.
Yeah, and everyone has intention to be self-insured, right? That's the name of the game at the end. But, you know, a lot of people fell short.
Do you have insurance that we're all not going to die and not get planted in the ground? Is that a thing?
Doesn't exist.
Okay. So then at some point.
For me, insurance was when I was starting the business and younger, I carried huge policies to pay off debt, to take care of the kids, to do all that kind of stuff. The kids don't even like me now. So
they never do.
And they're all I don't have that responsibility.
Right.
And I don't have the responsibility of owing a bunch of money. I don't have any of that.
And that's it. You don't have the responsibility of a young family, and you don't have the debt load that says, yeah, if I don't do this, I'm in trouble.
Correct.
So I think Tom is either playing charades or he wants to take a break. So
you can do either.
This is Money Talk AM 560 KBLU. This is Derek Eggerberg, NMLS number 180899 with Mortgage One. When it comes to the biggest financial decisions of your life, you deserve expert guidance. At Mortgage One, we know a home loan is more than just numbers. It's part of your financial future. Our team's highly qualified professionals provide a complete mortgage analysis. We'll help you explore the available programs and options to fit your needs in today's marketplace. The Mortgage One team will work to blend your mortgage needs and compare cash to close and payment options with various programs in today's marketplace, offering competitive interest rates to meet your needs. Again, Mortgage One, an equal housing lender, NMLS number 898812. Give us a call today at 928-483-LOAN, which is 928-483-5626.
At Yuma and Imperial Valley Wealth Management, we believe that knowledge is power. Since 2001, we've empowered the community with the financial insights and strategies needed to achieve your dreams. Whether you're planning for retirement or managing your wealth, our team is here to guide you every step of the way. Investment advisor services offered through CWM LLC and SEC Registered Investment Advisor.
Hey, Yuma, Money Talk here. We're talking about what pops in our head. We got Derek Eggerberg. We got the famous Wes Clark in here. And somehow we're talking about insurance.
Yeah.
So,
well, you say what pops in your head. It's like that cartoon character, the bubble comes up, and for a while it's blank, and then something just pops in, and that's what you're
thinking more of like the devil on your shoulder.
Hey, you have a much different thought than
I do. Oh, okay.
So I got some interesting stats and something to talk about. So if you remember when Trump was in his first term, they did some kind of tax change, and it really hurt the nonprofits. So they basically raised, to itemize, you have to spend so much,
yeah,
and it knocked out most people. So the nonprofits weren't getting as much money, yeah, and they were short $66 billion from 2017-2019, which is about 26% less people giving. Mm-hmm. And it kind of makes sense, because if people can't deduct what they're giving, I mean, that has an effect on their decision, or they don't do as much.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, the big beautiful bill is fixing that problem. So now anybody can deduct, give to a nonprofit, starting in 2026, $1,000 if you're single and $2,000 if you're married. Doesn't matter what income you're at, you can basically deduct it.
Okay, so it's going to be on top of the standard deduction. So that's what you were talking about, is when they raised the limit of the standard deduction, it wiped out most people being able to donate a couple thousand and have some additional write-off. So if that's a credit over and above the standard deduction, is what I'm hearing, that would be a welcome change.
Yeah. So it's good for more of the medium class people to donate, because they can get that deduction. Usually the ones that people that had higher income than that could probably itemize, because they probably have more stuff to spend on. But anyways, I'm sure the local nonprofits were like that. Mm-hmm. I even asked a couple of them, because I knew it was going to hurt them. I didn't know how bad. And they're like, yeah, we can fill it. But I never saw the stat on it. So about a 26% drop.
That's
nationwide. So
huge stat. Now, it'll be interesting to see how the tax returns get filled out over the next year or two, because you've got auto interest that could be deductible depending on, buying a car that's primarily manufactured and put together here in the U.S. You've got interest rates that are up. So lots of people that are doing refinances. If you got it, you know, again, let's pretend you owed $400,000 and you had a 3% interest rate. You're only paying $12,000 in interest the first year. Let's say now you had to refinance or you bought a new home and you had a $400,000 home at a 7% interest rate. That's $28,000 worth of interest. So you're going to have people this year and next year that have enough interest in property taxes and auto interest and things to start itemizing again.
Yeah, the big beautiful bill, which is a big move for the car dealerships, is that the interest on your new car you can write off, which that's never happened before.
With, as long as you meet those particulars of where it's put together, the final prep.
I mean, let's look at this. I mean, cars nowadays are, you know, 35, 40, and if you want to go to a big car, maybe
you look at some of these
60, 70, 80.
Brand new trucks are $80,000 to $100,000.
Yeah, so if you're like, say, 7% on a $60,000 car, that's $4,200. Take your mortgage. Hopefully you can get there. I think it's $24,000, right? Is that what you have to?
Honestly, I'd have to look and see what they moved it to for $24,000.
Yeah, I think it's about $24,000.
It's either $24,000 or $26,000.
Yeah.
So again, it's still a huge number to get over, but now you're telling me there's some effort that maybe you can still donate to a nonprofit and have an extra $1,000 coming off that. So those small things are huge wins. Now, the other thing that I don't think people understand about what's in the big, beautiful bill is you've heard the no tax on overtime, no tax on tips, right?
Yep.
Well, it's amazing how many people I talk to that say, I don't have to claim my tips. There's no tax on tips. No, that's not what that said.
Right.
What did the bill say? It says you claim your tips and the first X number of dollars is non-taxable.
Right.
You have to put them on your tax return. Well, that's good for us in the mortgage space because the problem is a lot of people who are servers and tip income, if you don't claim it, we don't get to use it as income. So this will help people buy homes, but it's amazing how many people think, oh, I just don't have to claim my income now because there's no tax on it.
I didn't even think about that.
Boy, that would be the kiss of death because now all of a sudden all of these servers that don't claim their tips.
So you can claim tips when you're looking at income.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you're supposed to. I mean, by law, you're supposed to claim all of your income, right?
But I didn't know it would be claimed towards, you know, guaranteed income or something.
If you have a two-year history of claiming your tips, then we get to average that and we get to use it. So I do believe that the no tax on tips is another way to help people report and get into homes and other things. Same thing with the overtime. Okay. You know, now the overtime is reported on your pay stub. So that was always going to be taxed. It's the tip income that is unique that most people that I talk to just don't know they need to claim their tips.
Well,
why are you looking tired over there?
That's your claim anyway.
Yeah, don't you think that they passed that too because, you know, majority or maybe not majority, but a lot of them weren't claiming anyway. So what's the difference?
100%. I do believe that part of that is getting people to claim their income so the cash-based economy that is never reported is also part of the system. Yeah. So, you know, let's talk about anybody who could have a cash-based business.
I mean, drug dealers.
Well, there's a different one. But the window cleaners, the landscapers, the house cleaners, you know.
Pool guy.
There's a lot of people that is cash-based, and it's not on the tax return, so they don't get the benefit of using their income, but it's not taxed. Now, did the banking rules change? Remember the old SARS report is if you used to deposit more than $10,000, there was a report. Remember what happened a couple of years ago? The whole big hoopla? How much of a deposit is reported?
It's not very big. I can't remember.
It's $500.
Is it $500? Okay.
Now, it's not a SARS report, but the depository.
But it just means everything gets reported.
Right.
That's all.
So that's leading into, in my opinion, humble opinion, the people that live on cash that are depositing their cash, it is getting tracked into the system. So you may as well report your tips anyway and then get out of paying the tax on them for the first, I think it's $25,000. Because otherwise you're going to show the deposits and at some point that's going to be tracked.
Yeah, a lot to think about.
So Tom, claim your cash.
Yeah, you know how every year, especially during the presidency election, they're all talking about making a simplified tax return. I mean, I think our tax return is, you know, I don't know, thousands of pages. And everyone kind of jumps on that board. I mean, I know Trump was talking about it, and then you just never see it happen. But to me, that would make a lot of sense because there's so much information. Even people aren't trying to cheat on their taxes. They just don't know what you don't know, and then you end up, you know, not doing it.
Well, and again, it's a huge book. Follow the rules. It's right there, black and white. Hire a great CPA or tax advisor. You know, do some studying. I know, Tom, you were not as good in the financial market the day you started, and you've gotten better and better and better, and you educate yourself, and you train yourself, and you hang around with other people who know the game. Learn the tax code.
Yeah.
You know, do you own the building that your location is in with a group?
I'm a partner, yeah.
Okay. So are there tax benefits to owning the real estate?
Yeah, depreciation, right?
Sure. So if you, you know, again, one of the things that they talked about years ago was, let's go to a income tax, a flat tax based on income shown. Well, what if that got rid of all of the depreciation that you just said? And I don't know that it would. Yeah. I'm just anecdotally saying that. But if all of a sudden you couldn't depreciate all of your business items, would that change your idea of possibly investing in real estate or equipment?
Yeah. I mean, all
sure would for me.
Everything changes, right? I mean, even when they come out and say you can buy equipment this year and expense 100% of it.
Yep.
I mean, you see these talk to Yuma Office Supply and all that. People go nuts over that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, everything's triggered by the measurement of money, right? I mean,
as long as you can be tactical about it, not emotional. And that's, I think, back to the credit card and auto repair we started with. How many people are tactically with their money, Russ?
I don't know.
If you said anecdotally, percentage-wise, how many people are tactical versus how many people just emotionally ride?
I would say 5% are tactical.
I think majority just spend money, and then when they see they can't pay stuff at the end of the month, maybe they're like, note to self, don't spend as much.
Don't go get that bougie coffee.
And maybe the credit cards go up a little bit, and then note to self.
Yeah.
But then some people, you know, and I've seen people take mortgages out, pay their credit cards off, and we're talking like $30,000.
Yeah.
And then you talk to them 5 years later, and they got $30,000 on credit cards. So it's almost like an addiction. They can't kick the habit, right?
It's what's the old saying, you know, a rising tide floats all boats economically, but you never know who's swimming naked till the tide runs out.
Warren Buffett.
I never heard that second part.
Okay.
Well, Warren Buffett said when the tide goes down, you can find out who's wearing clothes or who's naked.
Yeah. And truly, you look at those things and you go, oh my gosh, you know, Russ is so lucky. Look at the car he has and the home he has and the clothes he's wearing.
But look at his dog.
Yeah, but you don't know if he's running things to the maximum. Yeah. Like, and you just don't know because you see this exterior. You never go, hey, Tom, are you doing okay financially? You know, or you don't have the sign over your head like that Pictionary sign, mm-hmm. you know, oh, Tom's got a 492 FICO because he hasn't made any of his payments in the last 6 months.
Yeah, if you read the book, The Millionaire Next Door, which is an older book, I think
book.
They revised it.
Right.
It just goes to show that the common guy living next to you who you know, isn't too fancy and maybe a small business or even put money away for 30 years. And if they did it right, not on their mattress, those mm-hmm. guys are millionaires and you would never know.
Yeah.
Speaking of your story, I got to tell you this. So, I do a lot of work with quite a few doctors, and I got a referral from one of the doctors, and lived up on one of the hills on the mesa here by the hospital. Big house, always had new Suburbans, dressed like he was worth $1 million. Wife was dressed like she was worth $1 million. Always taking trips because I kind of knew him a little bit, and you're thinking, okay, well this could be a good referral, right? Show up and absolutely no money,
none.
But making good money. I mean, you know, they're making good money, blowing it all on, like you said, the facade of living the good life.
Yeah, I've had business owners that, again, same thing, you would assume are just doing so well that they need to do a cash-out refinance on their home. So on break, you asked me what some of the silliest ones are. I've seen cash-out refinances on homes to pay the retirement portion of the payroll that the company was not putting in when they should have.
Or taxes or something.
Yeah. But it wasn't once. It was every other year, three times in a row. It's like, okay, if you do it once, learn to start budgeting. But still was taking out equity of his personal home to put the money in for the retirement for he and his employees because it wasn't budgeted for. But boy, did they live right to the level of the water.
Oh.
You know, and again, if that's how you want to live, I'm not judging. It's just interesting that would scare the bejeepers out of me. You know, if you said, I have to refinance my home to pay my employees' retirement. So the alternative is sell your home and have no home to pay your employees' retirement?
Very few people walk up and say, you know, I make enough money for everything I want or need. Very few.
No. You make more money and the need goes up.
Right. They always want more, 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 more. And, you know, I've known millionaires that tell me that, God, I wish I had what that guy had. You know, it's just.
I mean, I remember coming out of college in our industry, you know, you don't make a lot of money starting out. But I remember I could be like, if I could make $50,000, then you make 50, and you're like, $75,000.
Right.
And then if I made 100, I'd be set. And then, like you say, lifestyle goes up, where kids happen and whatever else. But, yeah, you know.
Never enough.
Well, and, you know, again, let's go back to the word we all hate. We hate the word inflation, but we love the word appreciation, and it's technically the same thing. If you go back to prior to the coronavirus, our price is 25% higher than they were then.
Yeah.
Across the board. So 25% increase. But our home price is up that much. Inflation is just the tax that we all pay into. So when you say, man, if I could just make that much more, as everything gets more expensive, we have to pay it. But we want the things that we own to become worth more. So stocks, you want them to go up? I want them to go up. You want your house and buildings to go up.
I mean, think about, Russ could probably relate to this more, but if you had a $1 million house, especially around Yuma back in the day, like that had to be a nice house. Mm-hmm. And nowadays, because of the inflation and things, I mean, you could see a house for $700,000, and you're like, God, this is like average or above average, nothing great.
Yeah.
Well, what's funny is it's how you phrase it. So I had a customer come in this actually Tuesday. They're qualifying and they're putting an offer in on a home that's $599,000. I said, cool, what's it feel like to put an offer in on a home that's almost $750,000? And you could see the husband's face went, what? It's the same number, but you're offering on something that's almost $750,000.
Yeah.
We just don't equate those numbers like you're saying that, you know, those $1 million homes back in the 80s and 90s were palaces. No. And now you see some bread and butter homes in bread and butter neighborhoods that are 6 to 7.
Yeah. So, you know, historically, like the last 25 years, the financial people say inflation's about 3%. You know, it goes up, goes down, but 3% average. So if you put money under your mattress and pulled it out 20 years from now with 3% inflation, you'd have half the buying power. Mm-hmm. So what that shows you is if your money's not working at least more than 3%, then you're going downhill on your buying power. But you know, to get your buying power to go up, you need to get 6% or something, you know. Yeah. Now, those returns that are sometimes better than that. But the point is, a lot of people don't look at it that way. They just think, I got $80,000 in my bank account. I feel pretty good. Well, yeah, live for 20 more years and watch that get cut in half with your buying power. And they don't think, like you said, what do you mean? Well, you see what you can buy in 20 years with that amount of money.
Yeah, I need my 401k and IRAs to go up on your side. I need real estate to go up on my side. I need the economy to be strong so businesses go up. You know, again, we all have a part in this. And it's just, I think, what I love about doing this show with you guys is it's educating people in a non-pressure, non-salesy way. Again, Russ, how many times do you just help people come in and take care of their cars because they've never been educated?
Oh, every day. Every day. And most people just don't know. And that's okay.
You know, I mean,
that's what you go to an expert for, whether it's Tom or you.
And that's where I think the expertise comes in is, I mean, if you go back 40 years ago, you used to teach people in the owner's manual how to adjust the points and set the timing on the engine. Now it says, don't drink the battery acid. You know, why do we have to tell people don't drink the battery acid in your owner's manual?
Right.
Because somebody did. Somebody was that dumb, and they sued, and an attorney said, we need to put that in the manual. What's the other? I mean, like an RV. The RV manuals now say, don't get up from the vehicle while the vehicle is in operation. No kidding, Sherlock. Yep. You can't get out of the driver's seat.
Cruise control doesn't drive.
It's not autopilot.
Yeah.
But again,
they do put that in.
We educate because Tom sees things from his vantage point that you and I may not see, and I see things from my vantage point. And that's what I like about this is just it's spitballing things for the betterment of other people who hopefully can learn it faster than we did. Hmm. Don't you wish you had learned some of these things when you were 20?
Yeah, and the big thing is because you can learn a lot. Like you could be book smart, and you know you can read all these books. But to grow wealth, you have to actually have money in the game to do it. So it's nice learning strategies, but I wish I wish as I made more money when I was younger that I redirected that in the right area, mm-hmm. right? Because there is definitely years that I was on autopilot just working, and I realized, you know, like, you know, not much wealth was created because I was too busy working.
Yeah.
So, I, you know, that's where I wish for the younger generation, like, yeah, learn some of these tricks of the trades or how to grow wealth. But more importantly, figure out how to get your cash flow going so you can participate. Because if not, you sit on the sidelines with all these, you know, wealth ideas and you can't do anything.
Yeah. So personal budget, saving first, spending second, and then really focusing on being conscious of what you're doing unconsciously. When you talk about, you know, head in the sand and just grinding it out for a few years and not doing anything, sometimes we are just so working on that I'm unconsciously doing what I need to do that, yeah, Russ, don't you look back and go, man, if I had done a few things previously, you know, whether it's buying some homes or commercial real estate or directing some money, there's opportunity. And you're in a good spot. I think all of us are in a good spot. Yeah. But there's things that hopefully the next generation you go, do this a little differently.
Yeah, but that's like saying, why didn't my grandpa buy all these houses when they were $5,000 a piece?
We've talked about that. Because you cursed his name off air.
Because you're working with the money you got at the time, and you're doing the best you can.
And I don't think anybody, hey, go buy 100 homes right then. But that's kind of like what I'm trying to teach my kids is, okay, guys, you know, Evan, you just turned 21. You've got your work history. You need to go buy a duplex or a triplex or a fourplex in the community you're working in right now. Mm-hmm. You're going to live in one. You're going to rent out the other few units. You're going to buy at FHA, 3.5% down. Great. And in a year or two after that, then you go buy your single family home that you move into, and you own some real estate that you can use as an income perspective. And I wish I had done that when I was 20, 21. You know, I was too stupid and didn't buy a home till I was 28, 27.
But if you're truly saving, you know, say 15% of what you make, 20%, the opportunity, the money will be there if you don't spend it, right? So then there's a ton of opportunity. What do I do with that money?
Yeah.
I mean, even if you pick stocks, pick real estate, If you can have that habit, it will come, but you got to take the risk. Without taking risk, then it's tough to have your money grow, right? Yep. So
we're about out of time. And again, from everybody at Yuma and Imperial Valley Wealth Management and Investment Group, Mortgage One, KBL Yuma, you know, again, if you are serving, have served, if anybody in your family has protected this great country, thank you, because we couldn't do these shows without that service. And when you figure 3% of Americans will ever serve on our behalf, that means 97% of us live in the greatest country on earth at the greatest time in history because people served and sacrificed on our behalf. So stay safe, everyone. Have an amazing Labor Day weekend, and remember those who are serving on our behalf.
Yeah, everybody stay safe. Enjoy the weather here where we got it, and enjoy your family.
Because the flag still stands for freedom. And they can't take that away.
At Yuma and Imperial Valley Wealth Management, we've been proudly serving the community since 2001. Your financial future deserves the personalized care and expertise that only a local trusted advisor can provide. From retirement planning to wealth management, we're here to help you reach your goals with confidence. Investment advisor services offered through CWM, LLC, and SEC Registered Investment Advisor.
This is Derek Eggeberg, NMLS number 180899 with Mortgage One. When it comes to the biggest financial decisions of your life, you deserve expert guidance. At Mortgage One, we know a home loan is more than just numbers. It's part of your financial future. Our team's highly qualified professionals provide a complete mortgage analysis. We'll help you explore the available programs and options to fit your needs in today's marketplace. The Mortgage One team will work to blend your mortgage needs and compare cash to close and payment options with various programs in today's marketplace, offering competitive interest rates to meet your needs. Again, Mortgage One, an equal housing lender, NMLS number 898812. Give us a call today at 928-483-LOAN, which is 928-483-5626.
This is News Talk 560 KBLU, Yuma.